This is Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for making us part of your almost officially summer day. And thanks for following us to a Friday this week. It's time for Spectrum West. Spectrum West, proud of its flexibility when WPR programming brass decides something else is more immediately interesting. And in Thursday's case, that was certainly true. We were formally on at 5 o'clock on Friday evenings way back when, so we're not completely unfamiliar with the last day of the work week. We're going to make it worth the wait, however. Today, we feature insiders of two of this year's first music festivals. We'll be talking with Mike Bont, a member of Green Sky Bluegrass, one of America's best, and they're appearing tonight at the Blue Ox Music Festival. We'll also get the narrator's eye view of next week's Eau Claire Music and Arts Festival. Michael Perry takes some time away from his writing desk to help the festival be the whelming, not over, but comfortably whelming experience that it is. Jim Oliver has a preview of Into the Woods, direct from the director, Tamara Sharp. Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake is doing it. And let's initiate this Friday's Spectrum with this. They're hot off the presses, ready to take you back to a day when strong wills found ways and building a dam to slow the Chippewa River long enough to form a lake the size of Wissota was more than impressive. Now there's a book about the before, during, and after. It's called Lake Wissota, The Dam Story, a project of the Chippewa County Historical Society. Three people spearheaded the effort of putting together the book: Jim Hsu, Donna Burgett, and our guest on this week's program, Ann Keller. Tell me about the Historical Society. What drew you to it?
Actually, I'm more involved with the Genealogical Society.
Oh, you are?
And because of that, I represent that society onto the Historical Society board.
Ah.
So I'm not as involved with the Historical Society.
Well, genealogy is kind of fun to do,
it
too.
Is.
Did you do that for a selfish reason?
Certainly.
Yeah?
I wanted to know where my ancestors came from, and I wanted to be able to see the places that they left from, and I wanted to be able to document our history for nieces and nephews and my daughter, and then I started on my husband's family, and families in Chippewa area are so interesting. So one thing led to another.
Are you a believer in these things on TV that you send in your DNA that you can get the background? Are you a believer? Because there's skeptics about that.
I'm a believer to a point. I think it's pretty vague yet, but it's fun to do, and it gives you a general idea of where your ancestors came from.
Well, you have lived in the proximity of Lake Wissota for many years. You're a Chippewa resident. How long?
50 years.
You can tell I've lived here long enough to say Chippewa instead of Chippewa Falls.
Right, right.
And Chippewa as a two-syllable word.
Right, exactly.
Instead of three. It appears as if the lake itself has come to personify the character of the people who have lived around there for many years. And I'm guessing that you guys, in putting this book together, kind of found that. You found character in the people.
Exactly. The region and the people are wonderful.
What most impressed you about the people who were around back then, who had the gumption to put this whole lake together?
I think their willingness to be hard workers and to actually accomplish what they set out to do.
I'm in awe of people who first have the vision to dam up a long and vibrant river and then actually do the work.
The man who was hired to do the job of mapping it, talking about the future of it, was L.G. Arnold. He was the one who, when he was going to present a report, they asked him, well, what is the name of that you're doing?
Yeah.
He thought for a moment, and he said, Wissota. It comes from Wisconsin and Minnesota.
I think that's one of the first questions I asked when I moved to this neck of the woods. Why is Lake Wissota called Wissota? And when they told me, I said, duh.
Construction of the dam took 18 months to complete. It began in November of 1915.
Oh.
And in May of 1917, and it cost upwards toward $6 million.
Wow, and that was a big fortune back in 1915.
And in order to have enough people to build that structure, they had to create two separate villages that housed the people and their families.
Uh-huh.
And in those villages, they had a school and a hospital. So it became part of the region's economic picture, and it was so successful that it was nicknamed the Niagara of the Northwest.
And that was in a day and age when there wasn't a lot of technology.
It's amazing.
When I think of what it took to build a dam, then it's crazy.
It's absolutely amazing to think that the technology that they had accomplished what they did.
The dam, in its heyday, was a real energy producer. Is it still an energy producer?
Yes, it is. There are 14 dams that are monitored at Lake Wissota.
Let's talk about the book and putting the book together. There are just a ton of photographs. Talk about the research process. I mean, now we know that the dam took 18 months. How long did the book take? Did the book take longer than the dam?
No, the book took 10 months. It started because the dam will be 100 years old, 2017.
Yeah.
Jim Shu, who is involved with the Historical Society, and he's also involved with the Lake Wissota organization, and the Historical Society together felt it would be a good idea to not only have an event to recognize the anniversary of the dam, but also to create a book which would last forever. So he contacted Donna Bruchette, and she is the person who at the Historical Society is responsible for the picture library. She was able to gather together many, many pictures, and then Excel gave us, I think it was 500 pictures of the time during which it was being built. So with the pictures from the Historical Society and Excel, she was able to make a sequence of pictures that would be used in the book. From there, they contacted me, and I did the writing about those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And between the two of us, Don and I, we did the structure of the book, and Jim did all the details of the contacts and some of the business arrangements.
When people found out you were doing a book on Lake Wissota, did a lot of people come out of the woodwork with more materials that you didn't have at the Historical Society?
Yeah, some did. And it was very interesting because each person who has lived there, who has experienced living on the lake, has his own story.
It's quite a history. We're talking with Ann Keller, and she is one-third of the group of authors who put together the book Lake Wissota, The Dam Story. That's D-A-M, folks. Put out by the Chippewa County Historical Society, and it is fresh. I mean, I think the ink is still wet. It's a wonderful book. Wonderful pictures that go way, way, way back.
There are 300 pictures.
And it is divided into sections. They are Taming the Waters, After the Dam, Caring for the Lake, Tragedies and Disasters. There's a section called Around the Lake, and there's one called Living on the Lake. I was interested to note, leafing through the book, all the contentment and the enjoyment in many of the photos, but then the book also chronicles some of the tragic times. The lake has taken a few lives and been a nuisance a few times. There are some clips from old newspapers. Is that something that the Historical Society also had, or did you have to look up and find out?
They have some. They have some newspapers there, yes. But also, I think Donna did an especially wonderful job of researching online the historical possibilities, finding articles that are pertinent to the story.
This is one of those projects that you could just continue researching, but you had to get to a point where you said, okay, we have enough. Let's do the book. Did you find that you three, the three principals, and we have to give credit to a lot more people than just you three because there was a lot more involved. You three worked well together?
I think so.
There was a lot of agreement on things?
We met every Tuesday to compare notes and decide what we should be doing next. We got along really well. We each had our own area of expertise, if you would call it that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the overall project reflects a good group project,
yeah,
as well as emphasizing our own individual talents.
One thing I think people should get the book for, just to find out more about, is the dinky engines. I loved looking at those and reading about them. In fact, there's one part in the disaster chapter where a dinky engine actually had an accident, went off the track and ruined a trestle, and so those dinky engines weren't all just fun and games. So now, Anne, in doing the book, what did you learn that you didn't expect to learn? Did you think you knew everything about Lake Wissota?
I knew nothing about it, really. So everything I learned was interesting.
Yeah.
The people are interesting. The project itself is interesting. I guess just everything. People who lived there had their own stories, but they were all different, and they were very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
People who vacation there.
Well, I think this book's going to sell like hotcakes. There's a lot of people that over the years have been affiliated with Lake Wissota. People come from all over to vacation there. People have cottages. People have four-season homes on Lake Wissota. It is literally part of the fabric of Chippewa Falls. Chippewa Falls is noted for Lake Wissota.
Definitely.
Who printed the book? How did you get that
Rooney done? Printing.
They're a mainstay in Chippewa Falls,
mm-hmm,
so that made sense to have them,
mm-hmm,
put it together. And now here,
mm-hmm,
comes the $64,000 question. Where can the book be purchased? I'll bet you can help me out on that.
At Lucy's, which is part, yep, of 4 and 5 in downtown Chippewa Falls. They can get one at the Sandbar, at Wissota Cafe, And on June 29th from 5 to 8, they can go to the library downtown.
Is there a presentation there? Are you all going to be there?
Yes. We'll also be at the other places, too. We'll be at Lucy's next Monday morning, June 12th, from 10 until 1.
All right.
We'll be at Wissota Cafe on Friday, June 23rd, from 10 until 1. We'll be at the downtown library in Chippewa Falls, June 29th, from 5 to 8.
So proceeds from the book, where are they going? Are they going to help the Chippewa County Historical Society? Or are they going to help Lake Wissota Restoration? What are they going to do?
Ultimately, proceeds will all be used to help fund the new Chippewa Area Historical Society. We plan to build a new building. We have a lot already, and all the proceeds will go toward that building.
Ann Keller, thanks for being with us.
I enjoyed being here. Thank you.
Books are also available at the Lake Wissota Gordy's Market, the Chippewa County Historical Society. You can also get it by mail. Just add $5 to the $20 sale price. And you can send your order to the Historical Society at 123 Allen Street, Chippewa Falls. There's one other big celebration planned for Lake Wissota's 100th birthday. That's Saturday, July 29th at Lake Wissota State Park. Lots of dignitaries going to be there. Jerry Way and the Swampers are going to perform a special musical program and more. Good stuff. Two music festivals, one on now and another next week, coming up on Spectrum West. Support for WPR comes from Explore La Crosse, announcing River of Festivals, featuring River Fest, Great River Folk Fest, Irish Fest La Crosse, and over 50 other festivals. Details at explorelacrosse.com. Support also comes from the National Eagle Center in Wabasha, Minnesota, home to rescued bald and golden eagles with up-close eagle experiences, wild eagle viewing, and interactive exhibits for all ages. NationalEagleCenter.org. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. The 31st Spring Show is today and tomorrow at Caradori Pottery in Eau Claire. You can see and purchase works by 6 area artists. Times are 5 to 9 today, Friday, and 10 to 4 on Saturday. Well, every theater company that undertakes putting on a Stephen Sondheim original does so in the knowledge they're doing a unique classic. Here's Jim Oliver with just such a company and their challenge.
Into the Woods is a musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and book by James Lapine. The musical won several Tony Awards, including Best Score, Best Book, and Best Actress in a Musical. The Northern Star Theater Company in Rice Lake will open its production of Into the Woods next Wednesday, continuing through June 18th, and then June the 21st to the 25th, and there are no Saturday performances. On the telephone to talk with us about the production is the director, Tamara Sharp, who comes back and joins us. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for calling.
So, I think it's been pretty well agreed that this is not your common, ordinary musical. Why was the play selected?
Well, that seems to be a fair description. We ask our participants who do shows with us regularly to give us suggestions for shows, and this was one that was on their list. It's actually been on the list for a couple of years. We chose it this year because we were looking for a show that would highlight a lot of really gifted singers among young people and older people whom we have participating here at Northern Star. So there's about 18 singing parts in this show, and it was fun to be able to cast a wide range of ages and voices.
Well, tell us about this show that I implied is not your average run-of-the-mill musical. Let's talk a little bit about what the show gives to us.
It's based on very well-known fairy tales. So the characters include Cinderella and her stepmother and stepsisters, as well as Jack, who climbs the beanstalk, and his mother. There's a baker and his wife who live next to a witch who's put a curse on the family. Little Red Riding Hood is a part of the cast, along with a very threatening wolf. We have a prince. Well, we have two princes. We have Rapunzel's prince, and we have Cinderella's prince, and young men with gorgeous voices. We've got Sleeping Beauty and Snow White and Rapunzel. So just lots and lots of familiar characters tripping through this show. Act one takes the audience through their familiar storyline. Cinderella goes to the ball and she meets the prince. I'm not giving away the ending here because everybody knows the story. So they fall in love and they get married, and Jack climbs the beanstalk and comes back with a golden hen and a golden harp and gets his mother out of poverty. The baker and his wife do a favor for the witch, and in return, she helps them have a baby. Rapunzel is freed from her tower by a prince. So things progress. That's Act One. In Act Two, there are repercussions for all the things they've done in Act One, and it kind of takes us deeper into the story of, so what happened after the prince married Cinderella, and what happens after the baker and his wife had their long-awaited child? Did Jack and his mother live happily ever after in their new economic prosperity?
Would you say that this is a children's show, or is this appeal to adults as well, or is it something that children maybe shouldn't go to?
I personally think it's written for adults, particularly parents who have children. Mm-hmm. Because the messages are pretty deep and profound, and I think most people are familiar enough with the show. Spoiler here, it's not a happy ending for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in Act Two is the giantess from whom Jack has stolen the golden objects comes down the beanstalk for revenge. It's kind of like a tornado going through, tears a wide swath through the woods and creates a lot of damage, and you could easily bring children of any age to Act One, but then I would suggest take the six-year-old home at intermission because it's not the expected fairy tale.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the music in the show. You said there are all these singing parts. My goodness, is there something that we would be familiar with?
I want to answer that no immediately, and then, well, perhaps yes. Huh. I think a lot of people have seen the movie. Mm-hmm. So they have some familiarity with both the storyline and the music.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like singing Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma or something. They're not necessarily catchy tunes. But the lyrics are very clever. In a way, it reminds me of some of the lyrics in the Gilbert and Sullivan operettas. Very, very funny, very clever, very fast at times. Mm-hmm. And if you pay attention and catch all the lyrics, there's some surprises in there, but I don't know if you'll go home humming a tune.
It sounds like you have a pretty good-sized cast. Could you talk a little bit about who the principal cast members are?
Paul Baraboo, who's done quite a few shows with us, he was Javert in Les Mis, is the baker, and his wife is played by Michelle Balk. Most of the people in our cast have experience because the music is rather difficult. But we have some new people as well. There's a narrator who has a really important role. He's played by Jaron Paulson, a young man from Barron. Our Cinderella is Kayla Young. And Jack is a young man from Cumberland. His name's Ben Ancarlo. And he's a phenomenal dancer, although he won't be tapping in this show.
Oh.
Yeah. And Little Red Riding Hood is from Chautauqua. Her name's Ella Olson. She has a wonderful voice. We've got a lot of people returning. Paul Adams is the big bad wolf. A 17-year-old with an incredibly deep bass voice. He adds an element to the wolf that is kind of interesting. So lots of really talented people.
Well, the play is Into the Woods. We're talking to the director, Tamara Sharp. Let's talk a little bit about set design and who the technical people are. You have a musical director?
We do. Mm-hmm. His name is Jim Hurst, a musician by trade. He has done many shows for us. Has commented that this is a very difficult score. It's very challenging. A lot of the musicians playing in the pit are music teachers or musicians by choice. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to manage the difficult music. Every now and then, it's kind of fun to do something that's going to challenge you to new levels. Mm-hmm. I guess that's what the show is going to do for us.
Oh, that's great.
We have a husband and wife combination. They have degrees in theater design and lighting, although they work in the medical profession, Nicole and Chris Orson, who live here in Rice Lake. We're performing in The Round, which offers some new challenges. you know, when you're in the round, you can't build trees that stand in the way of the audience who are seated on many different sides. So our tree canopy is the ceiling, and then the floor is painted with a design of leaves, and we use gobos to create leaf shadows. So they've been very, very creative and clever. I think that's been one of the fun pieces every night, to come in and see what else they've accomplished.
The thing that I always appreciated about the Northern Star facility is that you can do a variety of different setups for your sets. You can do in the round, you can do thrust or proscenium or whatever you feel like, I guess.
Nice. Gives us a bit of flexibility.
Yeah, I should say. How do you get tickets?
The easiest way would be to go to our website, which is northernstartheater-co.org, or you can just type in Northern Star Theater and most of the browsers will bring it up, and then it's on the home page, so you just click tickets and go from there. They are reserved and they're $20.
I ask you if you would be able to talk about the upcoming productions at Northern Star. What's happening?
I'd love to tell you what's coming up.
Okay.
We have a kids camp in late June after this show. They'll be doing a production of Snow White. And I guess we're kind of caught in fairy tale theme this summer because our August musical is Cinderella. It's a comedy, very, very funny. And that is definitely designed for families and children of all ages. Then in September, we have a show that features first, second, third, and fourth graders as performers. It's called The Night at Dawn, and it's based on a Magic Treehouse story. That's something that a lot of young kids are familiar with. The main character, I believe, time travels to medieval times. We're bringing back Escanaba in the Moonlight in November as a dinner theater where we serve Hunter Stew and Line and Kugels, of course, and some other things around the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And then we close our season with a radio show. It's called A World War II Radio Christmas. It's about a radio show that was played for troops during World War II.
Well, it sounds like an interesting season.
Yes. And then we're in the process of relocating to a new home. Our building is in the way of a street project, so we'll be relocating for next year, and maybe I'll call you when we have details on that.
I had heard something about that quite some months ago and then hadn't heard anything lately, so I was wondering if that was still in the mix or what was
going on. Well, you know, these road projects move slowly, mm-hmm. but they are repairing one side of the bridge that runs on Main Street in Rice Lake. Our building, which was built in the early 30s, is so close to the bridge supports that it's not likely to survive reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of being bought out, and we'll be moving someplace else.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing from you as to what's going on there. The play is Into the Woods. The Northern Star Theater Company of Rice Lake is presenting the musical next Wednesday through Sunday and the following Wednesday through Sunday. The play is dark on Saturdays. And we've been talking to the director, Tamara Sharp. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for calling.
And thanks as usual, Mr. Oliver. You're listening to a Friday edition of Spectrum West. We'll be going back to Thursday next week. Thanks for following us a day late. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. Paint the Town, the Fine Art Fair, is going on this evening and tomorrow. Second annual Paint the Town Up and Down Fine Art Fair celebrates talented artists showing and selling their art at the Heide Center for the Arts and in downtown Chippewa Falls. It's this evening from 4 to 7 p.m. and then tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Well, as we speak, the Blue Ox Music Festival is underway, and we'll have a special guest on that topic a bit later, but let's talk about next week's festival first. It's the third rendition of the Eau Claire Music and Arts Festival. It's a spectacle for all senses and features some of the best and most innovative names in art, musical, and otherwise. Michael Perry, no slouch in a few of those artistic categories, serves as the festival narrator, and he popped his head in the other day to discuss it all. Did you know that there's also an author that lives around here that has the same name? Is Michael Perry your real name, or did you change it just so that people would think you were the author?
Is it my nom de plume?
You have to satisfy this for me, because I just feel real stupid. There are some people who put the S on Claire's and some people who don't. What should I say? I took French, and I still don't know what to say.
I can tell you the official pronunciation is Eau Claire.
All right.
Just the same as if the X and the S were not there. But as far as how you want to pronounce it in real life, I may get fired from my gig for saying this. If you name something E-A-U-X-C-L-A-I-R-E-S, you got to just take it, however people pronounce it.
Okay.
I believe that you are free to pronounce it however you wish. I think there's a general understanding that you can pretty much say whatever you want. All right. Think if you told me you were going to the Aux Claire's Festival, I'd say, fine.
So this is year three. Three's a charm, as we all know. You've been on board, I understand, for all three. What have you seen evolve?
The biggest thing is that they have evolved.
I understand that evolution is what they want to do.
It is what they want to do. And I have to say, as the guy, so as the narrator, I'm pretty closely involved in parts of the process, but I always like to say that I'm three rings out from the white hot center.
Okay.
Meaning I don't go to all the meetings. But what I'm pleased to report is that the evolution was something that both Aaron Dessner and Justin Vernon said they wanted to be a part of this festival from the get-go. What I can say in year three is that they're absolutely staying true to that, and they are trying to make sure that the festival maintains a certain essential character, but within that character does evolve. And you're seeing it this year with an increased focus on collaboration and getting different artists to work together. I spent a big part of my morning actually putting some writers in touch with visual artists and with musicians, and in the hopes that we can have some of those collaborations across genre at this year's festival.
Yeah, I did read that there are adjustments. Number of stages is reduced. I read the quote, merge the audience and the artist. That's their purpose in making some of the adjustments they're doing. Grounds are reconfigured a little bit?
Yeah, I think part of that is this intention to bring people closer together, literally, physically.
There's That's what I always thought merge meant.
Right. I've talked to Michael Brown, the creative director, and he said part of that is just to put an increased focus on these one-on-one collaborations that happen throughout the festival. And sometimes just by putting them in closer physical proximity, more people get to see them. And also I think there's a good neighbor element, too, in consolidating things and bringing things down the hill and just keeping it all together. And we really hope that each individual who attends the festival will choose their own experience. And so we try to create all these different little things. Of course, you've got your headliners. You've got the scheduled stages, the two main stages. And that's probably where it begins for a lot of folks. But what we also hope they'll do is that in between they wander around, they happen upon a writer giving a poetry reading while Sean Carey plays on a stage in the woods.
Wow.
And we hope that they'll go to see a dance performance and find that the dancers are collaborating with a musician who has just dropped in and popped in. And
this is kind of reminding me of a Renaissance festival.
Yes, or Renaissance. How's my
French
now?
I'm the one who took French. What are you trying to do?
I think I just proved that, didn't
trying
I?
Trying to steal my thunder.
No.
So now, this festival, what really strikes me about this is music is eclectic, with a capital Eck. And that's kind of clever because that's the initial of Eau Claire, too, is the Eck.
You're always working on all levels.
Yeah. And I'm really excited. We'll talk about a few of them, but some of the big guys. But one of the bigger ones for me, John Prine. I mean, is there a song better than Let's Talk Dirty in Hawaiian?
John Prine, people should understand, I'm not sitting there making the list of who's going to show up. Yeah. I see the list maybe a week or two before everyone else, but I'm not there initially. And when I saw John Prine was on the list, I was just thrilled. John Prine is one of my top five writing influences. I remember the first time I ever heard a John Prine song, I was in the basement of my friend Gene's house and we were shooting darts and he pulled out a cassette. And he put it in a little boombox, and he said, this is a guy named John Prine. And I'd never heard anything like it before.
Yeah.
And the writing.
Yep.
So a few years back, Justin produced a tribute album to John Prine where he got a bunch of his music friends together. And he and I collaborated on the liner notes. And he had mentioned at the time he hoped someday he could do something with John Prine live, and it looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing that I love about the eclectic nature of the festival is that Justin and Aaron have said from day one that's what they want to do. And they're bringing a guy like John Prine to the same grounds where Chance the Rapper is going to perform.
I was just going to say rap is on there too.
Yeah, and I just – what I've noticed from the people who show up for the festival and have a good time, they're showing up for the experience without any expectation, and they're just open to having a good time. And if that sounds hippy-dippy, I'll apply it to myself. I joke that when the lineup comes out, people will sometimes say to me, I don't recognize a lot of those acts. And I can look them right in the eye and say, me either, or me neither. And that, to me, that's part of the joy of it. You discover things, and things cross over, and these collaborations bleed into one another, and you discover something new and fascinating every year.
How can you not want to see someone named Happy Apple, Mouse on Mars, and Tweety?
That's... Huh? I can't say it any better than that. I mean, just reading the list is its own sort of poetry.
Paul Simon with Why Music. Oh, there's a biggie.
Yeah, I did not see that one coming. I wasn't at those meetings. But that's a gigantic name. I mean, that's in the American songwriting canon.
I've always prided myself in when someone huge was coming to within a sane driving distance of where I lived, I've always gone to see them because I didn't want to regret not having seen them. This is one of those I haven't seen yet.
Well, and I think one of the things that's amazing about the Paul Simon billing is, again, when Justin and Aaron approach people like that, they tell them straight up they don't want just the greatest hit shows. They tell them this is going to be a collaboration. So Paul Simon is appearing with Y Music, which is this experimental group.
Does that like stand for Generation Y? What do you think that stands for?
I'm open to any interpretation of what Y Music stands for. And
I mean, it's the letter Y, so I was trying to figure out what it's
I think it operates on a lot of levels.
Should I not work at that and just sit back and enjoy? Literal.
I do know that they combine a classical and a pop sensibility.
Huh.
So well, why classify it?
Paul Simon has been known for some really cool collaborations over the years.
Of course, that's part of his genre, is his collaboration. And so to be able to know that a guy with that reputation and those songwriting credits has come to the Chippewa Valley, but is also willing to say, yeah, I'll go ahead and do this different thing that you're proposing. I'm excited to see what happens.
Michael Perry with us. Eau Claire Music and Arts Festival is the 16th and 17th. It's, guess where? Eau Claire. Go figure. So not many music festivals have something called a narrator. You know, most of them have a guy that gets up and goes, hey, how you doing today? Hey, everybody having a good time? What does a narrator do?
I always tell people, I'll let you know when I find out. Every year it's
narrating?
A little different. To speak literally, I'm narrating a lot of the material that comes out ahead of time. When you get announcements or, for instance, this year.
But that's called an announcer.
Well, but there is a publication that came out.
Should I call myself a narrator from now on? I'm
sure.
Going to. Yeah.
See how that works for you. There was a publication called TROIX, that came out.
That's over the website. I saw that.
Yeah. And so my job as narrator is to write something that narrates our expectations for what the festival might be, but also opens the possibility that you can interpret for yourself what the festival might be. And so I think, speaking for myself, who's just happy to be there, I'm pretty much given free rein. The only thing I think of as a narrator is that rather than, as you said, announcing or saying, now we're going to do this, I'm sort of looking at what they're handing me, reflecting on it, and then describing it in a way that I hope will provide some sort of, if I may, contiguous thread throughout the festival from the first blog post or printed material that comes out announcing it right through to live acts on the stage, that there's some sort of thread of continuity there thematically.
So let's say someone walks on stage and hands you a note that says, Bill has been separated from his crowd and he wants to meet you at the porta potty.
Yeah.
What would you do with that? No, never mind. I don't care. Are there porta potties? Was that just kind of presumptuous on my part? Or are there really cool restrooms?
There are facilities available.
Okay. So now this is a week away, and we would spend more time than I'm willing to give you to list all the acts that are going to be there, because it is a plethora of music and or art and literature and performance artists. So how do I get tickets?
I would go to eauclair.com, EAUXCLAIR. IRES.com.
So it's a pretty cool deal, huh? Are you suggesting that I go, an old guy like me?
Absolutely. The range of audience is amazing. It is from young to older. I include myself in the older category at this point.
I would be oldest?
No, actually.
Maybe not.
Here's the bottom line. I'm a flat-footed clodhopper from Chippewa County.
Yeah.
Raised on Waylon Jennings. And over the years, poets, visual artists, dancers have opened my eyes and heart to a world I never knew existed. This festival is just a reflection of the joy that's been brought to me by artists of all stripes. And I feel like when you show up at this thing, if you just show up saying, I'm going to just wander around and see what happens, you're amazed from corner to corner, from spot to spot. You follow a trail through the trees, and at the end of the trees is a sculpture that you never envisioned. Somewhere else, there's a stage and someone's performing. And to me, there's this whole hang-up about getting stuff. What if I don't get it? And it took me years to get over that because I felt as the clodhopper, I'm just not artistic and I don't understand.
Yeah.
And, of course, eventually what you understand is that the experience is part of this, is what it is. Visual beauty, sonic beauty, whatever it is. I've found that even after doing that, you can still go back to driving a four-wheel drive pickup truck with deer dents in it. Yeah. You can do both things. We seem to be living in a time where you got to be one thing or the other, and I think it's heartbreaking. I love going to the feed mill and talking about the price of feeder hogs. I love watching modern dance. I don't necessarily understand modern dance. I'm not necessarily the guy you want choosing your feeder hog, but I enjoy both worlds.
Wow. Now, knowing me the way you do, you can imagine that I'm going to want to know about refreshments.
Well, yes. As far as food, there's been a real concerted attempt to have both local and regional food offerings there.
Yeah.
And if you're a person who likes to, say, have a beer now and then, there are some above-average selections available. Let's cut to the chase.
That, you went right to my heart.
There you go.
I'm there. I had a flutter. And I may be closer to going than I've ever been. It's the Eau Claire Music and Arts Festival, June 16th and 17th. Where is it again?
Right here in the Chippewa Valley.
Where?
It's at Foster Farms. Same festival grounds, actually, where Country Jam is held. So,
there you go.
As a local reference, I could say a lot of other things, but probably that's the most helpful. That is the most helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks, Al.
It is next Friday and Saturday, and it just keeps getting better, folks. This is Spectrum West, a rare Friday appearance. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver. We're having a good time. Hope you are. On the crest of a late spring. It feels so weird to say that because it feels summery, especially since tomorrow is supposed to be in the 90s. But it is late spring, officially. Hey, did you know that support for WPR comes from the Rusk Area Arts Alliance, presenting Art Along the Flambeau, a studio and gallery art tour with demonstrating artists at 9 venues in the Ladysmith area. It is June 23rd and 24th. RuskArts.org is the website that you want to go to for that. Well, here's a Spectrum memo for you. Again, this summer, it's Hogarth's West Denmark Fiddle School, just west of Luck, Wisconsin. Registration is Sunday for 4 days of instruction, and the final concert is Thursday, June 15th, at West Denmark Lutheran Church. Then next Tuesday, the 13th, the four instructors perform a concert at 7:30 p.m. It's worth the drive, folks. WestDenmark.net is that website. Artist Patricia Mayhew Ham is holding a creative mixed media painting workshop June 23rd through 25th at Artisan Forge. That's on Claremont Avenue in Eau Claire. Tomorrow, Saturday, is the first Cakes at the Lake event at Hunt Hill Audubon Sanctuary near Sirona, 8 to 9:45 a.m. And then the program presented by Long Lake Loon Ranger Barb Sabatke is at 10 a.m. HuntHill.org is that website. Well, if you can't wait for next weekend's Eau Claire Festival, you're open to a little toe-tapping and insatiable desires to dance right where you stand. Well, then maybe the Blue Ox Festival is a good place to start your festival season. It's on right now, also in Eau Claire, just down the road from the aforementioned Foster Farm site off Crescent Avenue. The lineup is an amazing combination of local, regional, and phenomenal, like a group who travels extensively simply because so many people want to hear them. They're called Green Sky Bluegrass. Michael Arlen Bont sings and plays banjo with the other four guys. They're on stage tonight as the late headliner, and I caught Mike just finishing up a round of Michigan golf on a rare day off. You will notice that he was walking to the clubhouse for the first minute or so of our chat, and here is that aforementioned chat. Well, let's talk about music. Bands often form under different circumstances. Bluegrass bands like yourselves, those people either tripped over the music on their way to something else, or it was about as natural as can be because of where you're from. You listened to it in formative years, or what kind of a thing happened to Mike Bont to become a bluegrasser?
I kind of found it through like the back door of like the Grateful Dead, you know, big Deadhead, and kind of discovered the banjo through Jerry Garcia. Eventually you find, Flat and Scruggs and Bill Monroe through what I refer to as the back door of bluegrass.
Mm-hmm. So how about the banjo?
That actually came as almost as like a fluke in a way. It was my 21st birthday. My mom asked me what I wanted for my birthday, and I had been a guitar player since I was about 10 years old, and asked her to get me a banjo for my birthday, kind of as a joke, and she actually got me a banjo, and the rest is history.
So you taught yourself? Did you take lessons? What?
I'm pretty much self-taught. I have a stack of banjo books that I have at home.
You a five-finger player, clawhammer? What do you do?
I do the five-finger style. Someday I hope to be a awesome clawhammer banjo because I've always been in love with the sound of the clawhammer, but I've never had time to fully explore the realm of the instrument.
That's kind of the real old-fashioned mountain way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But it's like this is the sound of it. It's real, real cool.
That's one of the real connections that banjo players have to their instrument is the fact that its roots go way down. Do you feel that when you're playing the banjo? Is that maybe why you wanted one?
So honestly, I was just really obsessed with the sound of it. I always liked the almost like snare drum like pattern that like the banjo rolls like create. You know, and it's almost like hypnotic in a way.
Well, and then there are people like Bela Fleck who make the banjo do things that most never envisioned for the banjo.
Yeah, they are certainly people like that. Just those innovators are amazing people to listen perform, for sure.
Mike, one of the promoters of the Blue Ox Festival, where you are going to be Friday night, and I understand you've been there all 3 years now.
Yes.
Calls you guys one of the hottest bluegrass acts going today. I know you're busy. Does it feel hot to you?
Yeah, I wouldn't say so much hot as this is probably the best, I think, that we've played together as a group in our existence. I feel like we are connecting very well on a show-to-show basis, and it's pretty awesome.
I'll bet.
Kind of know where people are going without even have to really think about it. You can kind of just essentially reading someone's thoughts or everybody's thoughts in a way.
Yeah. Well, I can give our audience an idea of just how hot you are. You don't like using the word hot. I'll just continue the theme. You play Friday night here, and then Sunday evening, tell people where you're going to be.
Sunday we will be at the Bonnaroo Music Festival down in Tennessee, and it will most definitely be hot down there.
Wow. I mean, Bonnaroo is like Woodstock. That's huge. That's like 150 music acts.
It is one of those festivals. It's just amazingly, amazingly huge. I think it's our third time there. Just driving around in a golf cart and getting transported from like the backstage areas to like the stage, it's just amazing how big it is.
Are you interested in hearing this cosmic link that I came up with?
Yes, I'm interested in hearing your cosmic link.
All right. Okay. We talked Bonnaroo. It's like Woodstock. In fact, it honors Woodstock. I did a lot of reading about Bonnaroo. Get this. There's Woodstock. And the last four numbers that I called are 1969.
Whoa. I recognize that number.
Yeah. Yeah. And 1969 was Woodstock. You're supposed to be there.
But that's why I picked that number, basically.
I'll bet, yeah. We're talking with Mike Bont. He is a banjoist and a vocalist for an iconic group called Green Sky Bluegrass. They're coming to Eau Claire, Wisconsin for the Blue Ox Festival. He's not concerned about it because he's out playing golf today. It doesn't matter to him. It's run-of-the-mill for them.
$27 in an old jean jacket and there's dust under the collar. Cause I've been walking for hours, but I'm almost where I said that I would be. Just like on television, this heart full of ambition has been haunting my dreams, reaching for grander things, and I never really knew they could be mine, but I'm out way past my prime, looking for
Let's talk about your latest CD for a minute, Shouted, Written Down, and Quoted. I'm kind of interested, Mike, in the process of putting a CD together. You compile enough new stuff that it becomes time to record. And then what happens? Do you record at different studios? Do you have a favorite you go to? Do you change up producers once in a while to get different results? What happens when you say, let's do a CD?
A lot of time, it's a lot of the material's already, not set in stone, but a lot of the material's already in place. Sometimes it's not, though. And usually it's we usually like to push ourselves because we're really good about not getting into the studio sometimes.
Okay.
But when we do get there, we really immerse ourselves. And Todd like to, record a large chunk of the album at one time because, we kind of look at it as like trying to get a picture or like a snapshot of our band at that particular moment.
Uh-huh.
We find that we feel like bands that record over like a period of an album over a couple years, what you may have started with a year or two ago is completely different from where you might be at now. And so we try to get as much done in one particular moment as possible, so we'll take a couple weeks and try to get most of the basic tracking done. So we kind of get like the spark, the energy of that whole session, it kind of encapsulated at least.
Okay.
And then we kind of do minor tweaks from there.
Is a lot of what we hear recorded like a live performance? So not a lot of dogs and ponies and bells and whistles?
Yeah, a lot of it is mostly live performance.
Okay. Cool. Well, you mentioned, or I mentioned, the fact that you're so busy on the road. How do you mix performing and writing and rehearsing as busy as you are?
I don't know. I think we've always just been really good about setting time aside for ourselves personally and then making the most out of the time that we have together. I think that's really important. When I get home, I'm excited to be home and I have my honey to-do list that I have to take care of.
Yeah.
And then I look forward to that moment where I often look forward to the moment when I go on the road for a month or so. And that feeling of like, I get to immerse myself in music for a whole month. And don't have to like mow the lawn or do the dishes or any of that stuff.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, we're looking forward to having you at the Blue Ox Festival here in Wisconsin. I have to tell you that as soon as I looked at the roster of bands, I said, this Green Sky Band, I think I want to talk to those guys. And when I went to listen to you, I was so taken that I went on Amazon and I bought the latest CD, so I have it. I wanted to get it as quickly as possible.
That's awesome.
That's how much I like you guys. It's good stuff. Appreciate it, Mike, for spending time with us on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for all the entertainment, and we need guys like Green Sky in this mixed-up world of ours.
We like to try to keep it real, that's for sure.
Great name, too, by the way. Who came up with that?
This was like a friend of ours a long time ago. Basically, we had just started playing, Dave, the guitar player, and I had just started playing some open mics together. We weren't even really a band yet. And a friend of ours just one night said, I think it'd be really cool if there was a bluegrass band called Green Sky Bluegrass. And it was kind of like it was that easy.
Wow. That's a
And it just kind of stuck ever since. We get a lot of green ski bluegrass, like we're the Polish bluegrass band. but it is Green Sky, yes.
Thanks, Mike. I know you got the 19th hole to get to.
Yep. I got to collect the money from all these old guys.
Attaboy. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, great talking to you. Thank you.
Mike Bont, Green Sky Bluegrass. Tonight at the Blue Ox Music Festival, let's indulge ourselves a little more.
I've been living close to home more than 30 years now, but I'm thinking about moving away from here. I've got a lot of reservations and I'm totally unsure. I'd just rather not know anymore. Like a lot on my mind. Think I'll try and draft a letter just to write it out and see how it reads. While we're waiting, I feel vulnerable. With no one chasing, I don't know. And I'm feeling so much closer to everywhere I've been.
There's a little hors d'oeuvre for you. You want to see him? Get over to Blue Ox. Some stages in West Wisconsin are lit up and busy. Let's find out which ones. Here again is Jim Oliver.
Thanks, Al. Into the Woods will be staged by the Northern Star Theater Company of Rice Lake from June the 14th to the 16th and the 18th, and June 21st to the 23rd and the 25th. There are no Saturday performances. Enrichment through Culture of Cumberland will present Charlotte's Web through Sunday and June 15th through 17th in the Cumberland Arts Center. Pump Boys and Dinettes will play through Saturday at the Red Barn Theater of Rice Lake. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Tony and Tina's Wedding through Sunday at the Oxford Theater. Stuart Little will play for student groups through Friday at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Next week on Spectrum West, and we're going to be back on Thursday, so that's the 15th, with a replay of the program. Friday evenings at 7, so we're on again tonight. That's cool. Next week, one of West Wisconsin's patriarchs in the world of sports writing. We'll talk about art crawling along the flambeau and more. Thanks, Ben, Kate, and Dean, for your examination of the facts. And thank you guys for being in the audience today. Hope you can do it often. Stick around, because Larry Mueller and his Garden Talk show is coming up next if you're listening to our morning broadcast. If you're listening this evening, well, hey, Larry's not going to be here. We'll see you next Thursday. Thank you.